Hello and welcome to Power Pros Podcast, Episode 5, The Shadow Falls. I am one of your hosts, The Hoff, Chris Hoffman, and with me is my pal, Chris Slate.
Hello!
And we've got a whole bunch of stuff to talk about this week. You know, we're still kind of riding the wave of post-E3 excitement. And, you know, one of the things coming out of the show was, you know, what's Wii U going to be like in the future? We know a couple things coming. We don't know what's happening further down the road. So that's going to be our big topic of discussion this week. What is the future, as well as the present and past, of Wii U?
The state of Wii U.
But before we get to that, we're going to talk some news. And we're going to kick things off by talking about something that is very near and dear to my heart and yours as well. And that is Amiibo. Now, as we're recording this, July is about to start. And July is the release month for two brand new Amiibo in the United States, in North America. And those two are Dark Pit and Palutena.
Two of my personal favorite characters, having really enjoyed Kid Icarus Uprising.
And, you know, I'm really looking forward to these two Amiibo. So I got in touch with my my deep hidden contacts at Nintendo of America and was able to get my hands on these two Amiibo early. And by that, I mean I just ordered the Japanese versions straight from Japan.
Amiibo collectors got to do what they got to do.
They do, you know. They haven't really said anything about, you know, when or where these will be available in the U.S. There have been no pre-orders or anything. We just know they're coming sometime here in July. So I went out and I took a look and picked them up. And, you know, so far, so good. You know, I really, really like what I'm seeing with these two. Palutena might be the most detailed amiibo they've done yet. Just tons and tons of, you know, intricate little painting with all her her gold doodads hanging off of her belt. And, you know, the stuff in her hair, the necklace. You know, even the the way that her leggings are done, just you know, all kinds of crazy little details there. The face maybe isn't so great in my opinion. I mean, it's not bad or anything, but when you look at the illustration's face, you know, the character model's face compared to the amiibo's face, it just looks just a tad off. But still, the overall amount of detail that went into this thing is really, really astonishing. What do you think?
Definitely. And, you know, it's like we keep saying, the sculpts on these amiibo keep getting better and better. They've come a long way from the early days. And I was never too critical of even the first wave. I thought they still did a great job. But you could tell how they earned a little bit of the criticism with some of the faces. And they were a little hit or miss, especially with the more humanoid characters. But for a while now, they've really settled into a groove. And everything they put out looks great.
Yeah, Dark Pit looks really, really fantastic as well. He doesn't have quite as much excellent detail as Palutena does, but it's a fantastic representation of the character, and he has a very striking pose with his arm outstretched. And, you know, it's, you know, some of the amiibo, you know, if they have things that are just, you know, sticking out into the air like that, you might be kind of worried that it might sag a little or drop. And so some of the amiibo, I think, you know, have stands to kind of take care of that. But I guess that's not really a concern with this guy because there is no stand or anything to try to prop up his weapon. So, yeah, I'm going to take that as a sign that they're just confident that it won't start drooping in a few months or anything like that. But overall, yeah, it looks you know, an excellent likeness of the character. And if you are an amiibo fan, these are definitely two more to look forward to, I would say.
And these two amiibo in particular are really represent to me what's so special about amiibo, in that you can go to you know, lots of stores and find great toys about the Mario characters or even the Zelda characters, Donkey Kong. But it took amiibo for us to get toys for side characters from a Kid Icarus game. Mm-hmm. You know, I file these alongside Duck Hunt, Dog, and Mr. Game & Watch, just toys that make the collection really special because they really cover the breadth and the depth of the history of great Nintendo characters.
Yeah, absolutely.
And now the only question is how hard will these be to find in the States when they come out? Because, mm-hmm. you know, everybody really hammered Reggie and the Nintendo execs in a lot of interviews that I saw coming out of E3 on just how hard it continues to be to find Amiibo. And
that
basically the
sure
message
is true.
Yeah, and basically the message they kept repeating is, look, we know it's hard. But we're getting better at meeting demand. As proof that they've been getting better, they kept citing the fact that the last wave they sold, I think, a million of pretty much almost instantaneously, and that they couldn't have sold that many if they didn't already have if they hadn't made some improvements in how many they're getting.
Now, they sold that many because people had to line up for hours that morning to be able to get the stuff. That's why they were selling so many, was because of the efforts of the fans, I think, more than the efforts of distribution. But there is good news, and that is that, like, the prices of these, of the Japanese ones, have continued to drop. You know, when they first hit, they were, you know, $30 or more, and now they're getting a lot closer to $20. So I think maybe with Wave 4, that might have been the breaking point. You know, things were just absolutely crazy. You know, you still can't find, you know, Robin or Lucina. But I think that perhaps at this point, you know, the madness might have subsided a little bit, and these are just going to be easier to find overall. Like you said, it still remains to be seen here in North America. But judging by the way the Japanese launch has gone, I think there's a good chance that things won't be as crazy as they have been in the past.
I hope so. And I'm willing to believe that things are starting to get a little bit better. I just think that there's such a big gap between the number of product they're about able to put out there and the demand.
Yeah, that's the big issue.
That we could have seen. There could have genuinely been some improvements with that last wave, but they still haven't met demand, so it's hard to tell.
Well, the four Robins per store, you know, four if you're getting any, four at maximum of, like, any store in the country, except for, you know, freaking Nintendo World store, which probably had, you know, all of them. You know, that's a big issue. That's a big issue that they have not figured out yet. You know, super popular character, one box per each store. Ridiculous.
Well, another thing to look at with this, with Palutena and Dark Pit, is that this is a wave of just two figures.
Just two.
We've never seen just two figures, you know, that small amount be released in a wave before. So hopefully that means
unless
that,
you count Gold Mario.
Yeah.
Hopefully this will be easier to obtain than Gold Mario.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully this means that they'll have, you know, a little bit more of a window there to just produce more of these figures. So I don't know. Here's a chance for Nintendo post E3 to step up and show the fans that they're listening, and I hope they do the right thing.
It'll be interesting to see, because it is, you know, some more obscure characters. It is only two characters, so this could be a time when they are totally readily available because they manufacture a lot, or it could be like, oh yeah, these are just minor side characters. They aren't really a big deal. So we'll see. We'll see.
We'll see.
Crossing our fingers. And you don't have them yet, so I'm especially crossing my fingers for you.
I may stab you in your sleep and take these amiibo.
It probably wouldn't be the first time. But so another thing that is very close to both of us is Super Mario Maker.
And still my early game of the year.
Well, and there's some news that's come out recently that makes that even more likely.
That's right. I think it was on the official European website for the game. They mentioned almost in the fine print at the bottom that, of course, you'd be able to connect to the internet and download, you know, endless numbers of courses. But it also stated, there was an extra little sentence there that said, even if you don't connect to the internet, there's still going to be 100 courses that come.
100 courses?
100, more than any other Mario game ever made, that come on the disc.
Now, that's a lot of courses.
Yeah, and obviously not each one of these. I mean, I suspect, I'm guessing here, but it's an easy guess that a lot of the ones that people in the treehouse and people in the testing department, levels that they had made, many of which were on display at E3, are probably going to make up the bulk of these levels.
Sure, sure. But that's, you know, any way you slice it, that's a lot of levels. That's pretty darn cool.
Right. Now, that statement did mysteriously disappear from the European website after news about it started circulating.
Oh, goodness.
So I guess it's not 100% confirmed yet, but it does really feel like what happened was typical of NOE. They let a little something slip out of the bag early.
Yeah, that's happened before.
It got pointed out to everyone. Maybe NOA or Nintendo of Japan called them up and said, we're not ready to talk about that information yet, and they took it down. But it seems unlikely that you know, an official Nintendo website for any territory would just make something like that up and put it on the site. So it seems like we're destined for something really cool here with these 100 levels.
Oh, I definitely hope it's true, because, yeah, that's a lot of stuff to sink your teeth into and, you know, provide inspiration for creating your own levels, too. So another thing to cross my fingers about.
Just another reason to look forward to this amazing game.
There's been some cool news about the new Fire Emblem as well, hasn't there?
That's right. Obviously, last week now was a huge one for equality here in the U.S. It is now legal to have same-sex marriages in all 50 states. And so that was perfect timing for Nintendo, although this information came out a little bit before that, for the fact that you can also now have same-sex marriages in the Fire Emblem series, specifically in the new Fire Emblem Fates games. Now, there's going to be two versions of the games, the Conquest version and the Birthright version. They're going to come out simultaneously, and I don't know if at the same time or a little bit after there's going to be a third campaign as well that's DLC only.
Yes.
Now, I guess the way it breaks down is, I guess we're talking baby steps here. There's only one character in each of the two main versions of the games that can have a same-sex relationship with your avatar character. And it's a male-male pairing as possible in the Conquest version and female-female in the Birthright version. So,
well, in the last Fire Emblem game, I used a female avatar. So I guess I'll have to get the Birthright version if I want to see that unfold, huh?
Sure. And of course, obviously, I mean, it's these games have, I don't know, it feels like hundreds of characters. I don't know the specific number. And we're only talking one character in each version. And that character can also have a male-female pairing as well. I mean, basically whatever you want for those two specific characters. And both of those characters are in the third campaign. So it's great to see Nintendo taking baby steps forward.
Well, I mean, they're listening to the fans. I mean, that was something people criticized from the last game that they wanted to see in there. They actively were saying, hey, Nintendo, how come this isn't here in this game? It doesn't, you know, represent, you know, how I want my character to be portrayed. So it's really great to see that they're paying attention. And, you know, even, I mean, that was mostly here in the United States where people were giving that sort of feedback. But over in Japan, they're, like, actually taking it into account and, you know, modifying what you can do in the game because of it.
That's right. And there was also that little flare-up about Tomodachi Life, where in that game, characters can get married, mm-hmm. but it's only female-male pairings in that game. There was a glitch when it came over to the U.S. initially that would kind of allow for a same-sex pairing, but then it was taken out, and that story was kind of misreported in the news, and people thought that literally it had been an official feature, but then Nintendo removed it, which wasn't the case. But they still took some flack for it, I think rightfully so. I mean, it's especially considering how much progress we've made here in this country in the last 5 years. You know, it's about time that game makers like Nintendo got on board with everyone else. And we're seeing that also in the Animal Crossing series. I think it was reported earlier this year that in Happy Home Designer, you'll finally be able to adjust the skin tone of your character.
Yeah, at last.
Yeah, so it's just Nintendo recognizing that they have a diverse audience, and they need to make sure that they produce games for everyone.
Yeah, it's especially cool in Animal Crossing. I don't, you know, it never made sense to me that you could only create a white-skinned character when the whole of Animal Crossing, everybody is a different race and color, and some don't even know what gender they are and stuff like that. So it makes a whole lot of sense, especially in that game, to be able to customize a personalized character like that.
Exactly. Now, one thing that I will say about the that's a little disappointing about the Fire Emblem situation is that if people remember the character of Tharja from Fire Emblem Awakening.
Yes, she was very popular and censored.
Yeah, in the U.S. version, she did have a bikini image or something from one of the...
Oh, that's what you think it was. You don't really know because we don't know what was behind that censored sign.
Yeah, but...
You could see all the way to Miami.
But she was a fan favorite, and but she was... I guess she really stood out because she was a very odd character. She was kind of a dark mage. I forget the exact term for that, but she was very infatuated with the player character, no matter who you were. Even if after you married her off, she would still seem to have some creepy obsession with you, and she would, and she was also enjoyed violence and the idea of other people getting hurt. So she wasn't.
They each their own, you know.
So she was on the good side, but she, or rather, she fought with the good guys. But she kind of seemed a little bit like a bad guy, and she's definitely seemed unstable and a little creepy. Now, apparently, both of the new characters that in Fates that are available for same-sex pairings have basically Tharja's same attitude, her same skill sets. They very much look like Tharja. So it's like, okay, you can have You know, if you're a gay guy or girl, you can have a romantic interest that more maybe applies to you, but they're going to be the weird, creepy, oddball character.
Well, I guess we'll just wait and see how that's all localized before we make any judgment about that. Or at least I'll wait and see.
Well, sure. And like I said before,
that does sound a little weird, yeah.
It's baby steps, but at least Nintendo's moving in the right direction. Hopefully a lot more people will follow.
So something else that's cool in the news these days, there's an exciting update on Shovel Knight, the classic-styled 2D platformer that came out a while back.
One of my favorite games last year.
It's getting a physical release. It is getting a boxed physical release. It is coming to Wii U and 3DS, and you know, as well as the competing systems. You're going to be able to get a physical copy, complete with, you know, full-color manual for only $20.
That's pretty good. I mean, I'm a little bummed because I've already bought it, and if I buy the physical version, it'll really just be to have it as a collectible on my shelf. But it's a great game, and I'm glad that it's had enough success that it can justify that.
Yeah, what were the numbers they were talking about?
I think it was 700,000 so far, I guess, across all platforms.
That's pretty impressive.
I mean, you're approaching a million copies sold for an indie game that looks like a Nintendo game from 25, 30 years ago.
More or less.
That's pretty amazing.
Well, it's a really, really, really great game, as you said, you know, one of the favorites from last year. So it's really nice to see that kind of success. And I'm sure I'm going to figure out some excuse to buy a version of that game. You know, I played through it on Wii U, and I have bought the 3DS version, but I don't think I've really played it that much, just a little tiny bit. So I might find the excuse to be like, oh, yeah, sure, I'll buy a physical copy of the 3DS game. I really do want to have a physical box and manual for. That was something I was thinking of just a couple weeks ago, how I would really like to have physical versions of that and Shantae. And so when I saw that this was actually a reality, I'm like, oh, wow, that's really cool.
Well, you probably won't have a physical manual, unfortunately, since those don't really exist.
Oh, no. They've already said it. It's happening.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's a done deal. They have promised. No two-page leaflet is what they said. Real deal manual. Yep.
That's cool if it's the old-style nature of the game. And so there'll be physical versions for both Wii U and 3DS?
Yes, as well as Xbox and PlayStation.
Now, did you hear if this version will include any of the DLC? Because they're working on a lot of new, you know, extra campaigns.
Well, it'll be upgradable. You know, you'll be able to patch it and get all the new stuff. And they're saying that the Plague Knight campaign should be out for all the current users sometime before this game is released. So if you currently have it, you'll be able to download the update and get that campaign. And then that will also be in the physical version. There's also going to be a challenge mode. They said 50 challenge levels. And I'm not sure if that's exclusive to the physical version or if that's also something that's coming to the downloadables or not. But it sounds like they're going to be, you know, that's the only thing I'm not sure about. Everything else is going to be, you know, feature parity. If you have the physical version or the downloadable version, either way, you'll be able to get all that stuff.
Well, that's pretty awesome. I'm really happy for Yacht Club. It's great to see that game getting more love. And if anybody listening hasn't tried that game out yet and has even the slightest interest in that kind of platformer, you should definitely check it out.
Yeah, it's coming out on October 13th. And you know what? They've also promised it's going to be even more exciting Shovel Knight stuff for on Nintendo platforms. They haven't really said what it is, but they said it is going to be a Megatron announcement.
A Megatron announcement?
I'm sorry, a Megaton announcement. No giant robots, as far as we know. But, you know, my guess is kind of that, you know, they put the Battletoads in the Xbox version. They put Kratos in the PlayStation version. So I'm thinking maybe they come up with something to put some sort of exclusive new character into the Nintendo versions, because, you know, I think that's what fans were kind of complaining about, that they didn't get their exclusive character that these newer versions got. What could it be? You know, I couldn't begin to guess, except maybe it's Megatron.
I guess Mario would make the most sense if you're looking for an exclusive character, but I'll tell you, because of the way the game plays, it seems like Mega Man would be more fitting.
Huh, that would be pretty amazing. And he's kind of like Megatron as far as his name goes.
And Capcom seems happy for Mega Man to appear in as many games as possible as long as they don't have to make them.
I suppose. But anyway, to slice it, I'm excited to see where that goes, whether it's Mega Man or Mario or something completely different. They said something that it's not going to be what we're expecting, but, you know, who knows? Our expectations are weird, man.
The Amazon from pro wrestling.
There we go.
Make it happen, Yacht Club.
There we go. And speaking of cool downloadable games, we talked about Zeo Drifter coming to Wii U before, but at that time we did not know that it was going to be a cross-buy game. So apparently, if you own it on 3DS, you're going to be able to get it for free on Wii U.
That's amazing, because there are times when you just want to kick back and play any game on the big screen. But if I had to choose, I haven't played the Wii U version yet, but I've seen some screens of it, and it very much looks identical to the 3DS version.
Yeah, it seems to be pretty much the same game.
Except I've said this before on this show, but the 3DS version has some amazing stereoscopic 3D.
You can leap from the foreground to the background, just like in Mutant Muds, and that lends itself perfectly to the 3DS.
Right. So I feel like that's still the superior version, at least on paper, unless I see something in this new Wii U version that I haven't seen before. But it's such a great game, I still would have felt compelled to get the Wii U version. Now I don't have to make the choice.
I know. I was like on the fence, like, do I really need another copy? But, hey, it's free. Awesome.
And let me just say to anyone out there who was disappointed in the Metroid Prime Federation Force announcement and wants a more traditional Metroid experience, check out Zeo Drifter. It's awesome.
Yeah,
absolutely. It's short, but you get what it doesn't cost a lot either, and it's an amazing experience while it lasts.
Yeah, it's very, very good. So big props to Renegade Kid. So what else we got going on this week?
Well, just a quick announcement for everyone playing Splatoon, which according to how much love that game seems to be getting, be a good chunk of the people listening here, the Cats versus Dogs Splatfest, the first Splatfest in the U.S., is back on. I think it was delayed from its initial date, and is supposed to take place on July 4th. So that's a good way to kick off the big weekend there with the Splatfest, which is a special kind of challenge where people choose sides. In this case, whether they prefer dogs or cats, you kind of there's a place in the main hub where you go where you sign up on either side, and then you all fight throughout the weekend, and then at the end, whoever they add up the kind of the wins and losses, or basically, they add up the wins and losses between everyone who was on the cat side versus the dog side. In the end, they pick the team that won. And now that I've spoken about it this much, I'm not sure if there's like a big reward or what. It's just kind of a unique kind of a one-off event, and they're going to do more of these in the future. So it should be fun.
I couldn't tell you, but are you going to be playing?
Yeah. I mean, I've meant to be playing more Splatoon this week than I've had time to, actually. But this will be a good excuse for me to make the extra effort to get back in this week.
Which side are you going to pick?
Dogs. I've actually already picked the dog side.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Well, speaking of multiplayer-focused first-party games, there's been some interesting news trickling in about Smash Brothers.
Yeah, I guess Sakurai confirmed in Famitsu in an interview that the last round of the DLC characters, Ryu, Lucas, and Roy, were already in the works before they even put the Smash ballot up.
Well, they pretty much had to be. I mean, that ballot is still supposed to go for another couple months.
Yeah, until October. So it was kind of something we already knew, but it was interesting to hear it confirmed. And he basically said that, from here on out, it's just fan service. It's just what people want. He said they're going to make several more characters.
Was that an exact quote, several more?
It was, according to the translation. But again, when you're translating from Japanese into English, I don't want to get too hung up on the specifics of how many that could mean.
It's true.
It's possible that a more direct translation could have been a couple.
It could have been some.
Some, a few. But he did seem to be making it within – he made that point within the context that they are going to be winding down. He says He said they can't – he can't keep a team up working on this stuff forever.
Sure they can't. Well, that's why they make shackles.
As much as I've enjoyed this DLC, I do want Sakurai to start on a brand new game. And hopefully it won't be right into the next Smash Brothers. Hopefully he'll get another Kid Icarus Uprising.
Oh, they probably do deserve a rest.
He should take the Duck Hunt dog, spin it into his own series, just like he did with Kid Icarus after Smash Brothers Brawl.
Oh, yeah. They can make that spiritual successor to Banjo-Kazooie with Duck Hunt Bird and Duck Hunt Dog.
Yeah.
Very exciting. So as we're doing this recording, we are preparing for, a bit of a wake, a sad, tragic wake for Club Nintendo, which is now dead.
That's right. As of the end of today, it's officially gone.
I spent the last of my coins, and I really did buy Grill Off with Ultra Hand. But we're still waiting on what's going to replace it. They promised there would be some sort of loyalty program coming, and we're still not quite sure what that is. But they have talked about a little bit recently, right?
Yeah, there was an investor briefing, a Nintendo investor briefing in Japan last week. And Iwata, in discussing a broad range of things, was asked the question about why digital titles aren't discounted compared to the packaged versions. And his response was very interesting. He said that they plan to provide some benefit with the new membership service starting in the fall. So right there, that gave us a time frame for whatever this what's probably going to be the Club Nintendo replacement, because this also ties to some comments Iwata made a while ago, where he talked about how they had these ideas for rewarding people who bought, you know, a good amount of Nintendo games versus just one every now and again.
Right.
The comment came in the broader subject of how they were going to tackle the changing kind of games industry. And one of the items he was looking at was pricing. And this was kind of going to be a part of how they were going to respond to how you price games in the modern age. It's like give discounts to the most loyal customers, essentially. And it seems like that's going to be a part of what replaces Club Nintendo, and that we might see it this fall.
Now, when I hear that, it makes me think it's just going to be kind of like the Digital Deluxe program that they had for Wii U, where you would buy digital games and you get a percentage back, and then you'd be able to use that as, you know, like a credit. You spend $50 and you get a $5 credit. And, you know, I hope there's a lot more to the loyalty program than that, but when he says it, you know, this way, I'm thinking as far as discount digital games, though, I'm assuming it's just going to be something similar. We'll see.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, if he's going to help me save money on buying games I would probably buy anyway, then I'm certainly not going to complain. But, you know, at its best, Club Nintendo was really fun because of, I mean, Nintendo, it's cheesy, but they like to surprise and delight people, right? They've always said that. And Club Nintendo could be surprising and delightful when they offered something really neat.
Yes.
Now, it's kind of been on life support for the last year.
Yeah,
more than that.
Like 2 or 3 years.
So at this point, it's no big...
Except now it's dead. It's now dead.
Yeah. We finally flatlined on Club Nintendo. And at this point, it's not that big of a loss. But,
They could have done so much more.
Hopefully, the discounts will just be part of some bigger, broader initiative.
Yeah, that's what I'm hoping as well.
But the good news is, well, it seems like from his comments, we'll find out this fall exactly what it is.
Mm-hmm. Also got some news about something we talked about on the show last week. You were saying, you know, after Super Mario Maker, maybe we will see other games get the same treatment. But alas, your hopes have been dashed.
Yeah, unfortunately, Game Informer interviewed Tezuka, who's producing, I believe, Super Mario Maker, and suggested the idea of a Zelda Maker, but he basically said that it would be prohibitively challenging. He said Super Mario Maker was challenging as well, but he really seemed to hesitate before even entertaining the idea of doing this one. He didn't close the door on it entirely, but in thinking about it, I guess I see where he's coming from. Mario Maker, the fun thing about it is you can whip something up and play it immediately. And whether it's good or bad, there's an inherent fun in kind of crashing and burning, even if you've made something that doesn't work quite yet. If you were even designing just a Zelda dungeon, let's say that it was like a dungeon maker and there wasn't an overworld, it's still quite a time investment just to get even a small dungeon up and running before you can even try it or ask a friend to play it. So
it is. I mean, there's a market for, you know, bigger game creation software than Super Mario Maker. You know, we talked about how I've used RPG Maker to, you know, make, you know, these hours long epics starring Mr. T. And, you know, I could definitely see, you know, Mr. T in a Zelda-like game as well. But yeah, it takes a lot of investment to make a game that's that big. And, you know, I can kind of see why Nintendo wouldn't want to go that route.
Yeah, unfortunately. I apologize to anybody whose hopes I may have raised with last week's podcast.
Yeah, I didn't want to rain on your parade last week, but I had a feeling that this felt more like a one-off than anything else.
You know what, though? I dreamed of a Super Mario Maker for the last 30 years, so, you know, I'm going to keep a small flame of hope burning for the next 30.
All right, then. So we're not getting a Zelda Maker, but we have been reassured that we are still going to be getting Devil's Third, which is the Wii U action game from Itagaki. And we've seen some footage that came out in Japan recently, but then it wasn't at E3, and we weren't really sure what's going on, and I was thinking, you know, maybe it's going to, you know, just sort of, you know, fall off the face of the earth as far as North America is concerned. But apparently not. He responded to a fan on Twitter and has said that it is definitely going to be coming out in North America.
Right. And then I think, you know, it's unclear whether there'll be a physical version of the game or if it's digital only. And I think another fan tweeted the possibility that it will be a digital only, and Itagaki liked that tweet.
Yeah, so that had crossed my mind as well. I could definitely see that happening. But, oh, man, digital only on Wii U is such a rough way to go. I haven't invested in a hard drive yet, and, you know, you can fill up the internal memory with just a handful of games.
You mean especially, like, full-formed
retail games? Yeah, full-fledged games. I mean, I have just a couple on there, and combining that with all of my virtual console stuff, yeah, I am just barely getting by. I'm probably going to have to invest in some sort of external storage soon. But regardless of that, the game was looking a whole lot better in that footage they revealed, so I'm glad to see that's still coming out.
I personally didn't have much interest in that game other than the fact that Itagaki was making it. I just kind of liked the guy. For whatever reason, he's always been kind of a colorful, kind of entertaining figure in the industry. Met him a few times. He was really cool. And, you know, with the state of the Japanese games industry right now, the idea of a famous developer just still doing what he does and making big titles, I mean, I want to see more of that rather than them, you know, kind of fading into the mobile scene over there. But it's funny, like, if it wasn't for him, just looking at the game, it doesn't look like it's really up my alley. But then you tell me that it might not get released over here, and suddenly I get defensive.
Yeah, I know. I feel the same way.
I'm like, hey, bring that out. And I still may not buy it, so I'm not going to.
I mean, a year ago, I thought Devil's Third was just looking terrible. And I'm like, oh, man, they can just kind of brush it off the side, and I won't care. And it's been funny because I keep going into stores and seeing retail spaces that say Devil's Third on. They're specifically in Target, and they put, like, the most inappropriate game in its spot, like, oh, you know, here's some Snoopy game or
here's
something.
Pac-Man and the Ghostly Adventures.
Yeah, and it's labeled as Devil's Third, and it's hilarious. So yeah, we'll see where that all goes. But speaking of games that are the complete opposite of Devil's Third, there's been some new news about Animal Crossing Amiibo Festival, right?
Yeah, just a little tidbit that I read. Apparently, the Amiibo cards that are primarily being made for Happy Home Designer can also be used in Amiibo Festival. I think that was talked about a little bit at E3, but they didn't talk specifically about how. And this new bit of information says that they can be, quote, used in fun minigames. So I don't know if that necessarily means that you need the cards to unlock the minigames, or if once you've booted up a minigame, the cards add some extra functionality to it.
It's interesting, though, because in what they've shown of the game, it seemed very devoid of minigames. So to hear they're actually going to be minigames in there at all is reassuring.
Yeah, during the Treehouse live streams at E3 when they were demoing that game, they would make vague references to the fact that the Amiibo Festival package included more than just the board game that they were demoing. But yet it still made it sound like the board game was primarily what the title was centered on. And since the board game honestly didn't look terribly exciting, just the idea that there is more to that game and that maybe the Amiibo cards can help make whatever else is in there more interesting is good news.
Can I make a confession right now?
Please do.
I pre-ordered that game this morning.
Well, I'm going to buy
the
it
game,
too.
It's two Amiibos, some Amiibo cards. I saw it available and I had to do it. I can always cancel later if I change my mind, but I'm going to get those Amiibos one way or the other. So,
was it the package that comes with the Amiibos and the cards?
Yes. I mean, I'm not even sure if there is going to be a different package, but I think for your $60, I think that is what you get.
Kind of a Wii Play situation, where it's really about the controller that game came with and less about the software.
I suspect so. I suspect if you're spending $60 anywhere, you're going to be getting that whole bundle. You know, there are some places at retail right now where it's unclear what you get, and I think it's just because they didn't really know. If you're going to be just buying the game separately, if that's even an option, I suspect it'll be way less than 60.
Well, if the game is just a little extra spice added to basically a box of toys that I would buy anyway, then I guess I have less of a problem with it.
Yeah, so I took the plunge. I now have a pre-order on that. It's true.
I've been pre-ordering a lot of games, and sometimes because of the Amiibo functionality that I wouldn't normally get. But I think an also reason that I've been doing it, and I guess we'll get to this in our big State of the Wii U topic in just a little bit here, is that it feels like so few games are coming out on Wii U these days that that I kind of don't want to miss one. So I've been buying my Mario Party, and I'll buy this, even though maybe in a more robust year I'd pass.
Now, this isn't a Wii U game, but have you pre-ordered Metroid Prime Federation Force?
No.
Hmm. Well, despite that, there's been a few bits of news trickling out about that game as well. There was a Wired interview with the producer, Mr. Tanabe, and he was commenting on all the negative feedback that the game has been receiving out of E3.
Yeah, and a lot of interviews coming out of the show, I've saw some with Reggie as well. They're very defensive about this game. And the common thread or the common thing that they say a lot is look, we understand that people are disappointed about
this.
Please
understand.
Yeah, please understand. We've seen the negative reaction. We're very well aware of it. But, and then they go into why they think this is a good addition to the series, that people really have to play before they can pass judgment on it.
So what's their excuse?
Well, it's Mr. Tanabe, I guess this is an idea. This game is based off of an idea he's had for a while now, where he really wanted to show more of the story that takes place between the Federation and the space pirates, away from Samus Aran.
Do they realize that people don't care about the battle between the Federation and the space pirates away from Samus Aran?
I don't think they do, because what they've essentially said here is, it's kind of like Metal Gear Solid 2, right? Where everyone loved Snake as a character, especially after Metal Gear Solid 1. They wanted to play as Snake. The game starts. Spoiler alert, you don't play as Snake. You play as Raiden. And nobody liked Raiden. And then when Snake showed up, people just got pissed off because they just wanted to play as Snake. And
oh,
then,
yeah. I remember that well.
You're like, Snake, come back. Don't go away and leave me with Raiden again. So, speaking of that, Mr. Tanabe said that Samus Aran will be in this game. She'll show up as a non-playable character, and you'll get to experience what it's like to see her be a badass while you are trapped in the body of a know-nothing NPC.
So, yeah, so like you were implying, that's kind of even worse. You're stuck with a character that you don't want to be, watching Samus do her thing.
Yep, and he talked about how there would be some variety to the missions where there's some way you're protecting a train as it works its way through
the level.
Man,
people hate protecting missions. No one wants to play those.
Here's the thing.
I guess it could be done a cool way or something, but man, that is not filling me with a lot of faith.
No, and this
seems like they're really focusing on the wrong sorts of things.
When you listen to Mr. Tanabe talk about the idea, it seems like the whole focus of this game and the reason for it existing is that he wanted to tell a previously untold kind of part of the Metroid Prime universe. But here's the thing: the story has always been the weakest point in the Metroid games.
Yeah, we don't really care about this story. It's the atmosphere, and it's kind of the not knowing that makes Metroid really, really good.
Right. The more you sit down and explain, like, the political structure or how certain factions are warring or whatever.
Who cares? I just like the mystery and the ambience.
Exactly. So I still think this game is a pretty terrible idea. And I got to say, as someone, even just judging it, and I've been reviewing games I reviewed games for decades. So I'm totally able to go to that mind space where you give a game a fair shake.
Right.
You put your personal biases aside and you say, just take it on its own. How is this game? Totally ignoring the fact that this is a Metroid title, I just don't think the game looks very interesting. It doesn't seem to be doing anything especially new or innovative. And it just looks like a watered-down version of something we'd seen lots and lots of times. Now, it could still – I mean, the controls could be spot on. It could still play well. But here's the reason there was obviously the initial backlash against this game once it was shown at E3. People hated the idea. Even people went on so far as to petition the game not to be made.
Yes, as we've discussed.
And then you had the backlash against the backlash, where people were like, hey, calm down. This is video games. It's not life and death. And Next Level makes great games. And, you know, trust Nintendo know what they're doing. Play it first. You know, it could be a great game, and that's all true. But here's why I'm glad that, and I don't want the game to be canceled, but here's why I'm glad that people did make a really loud, obnoxious sneak about it, is that people at Nintendo now realize, and they've admitted in interviews, that people aren't excited about this game.
They definitely know. There is no mistake at this point.
So if this game comes out and tanks, I'm hoping Nintendo doesn't just say, well, you know what? The sales on Metroid games in general had been soft for the past several installments. They obviously don't put as big of a priority on keeping this series up as they do on Zelda and Mario, and even at this point Animal Crossing and some other things. And my big fear with this game was that if it tanked, Nintendo would just think, well, the franchise doesn't have a future.
Right, as we talked about last week.
But now hopefully they know, okay, you know what? Now if it tanks, they understand why this tanked.
There's got to be some level of understanding by now.
They got to know this wasn't what the Metroid fans wanted, and that if they could do a more traditional Metroid game in the future, it's still got a shot. So, you know, I don't know that I necessarily agree with all of the methods people have taken to voice their disapproval of this game, but I tip my hat to them. I think we did good work.
Yeah, I just wish that, you know, they would pay more attention from the creative side, and that, you know, Mr. Tanabe might actually take some of this into account when they're making the product.
It's very non-Nintendo-like, isn't it, to basically say the genesis for a game was some kind of story.
It is. It is really weird now that you mention it.
Yeah. I mean, you think...
Usually that's like the last thing they worry about.
Usually they say, we had this great new idea. We paired it with the traditional franchise. We put this thing out. It's a great new fun spin on an old classic. And then we'll figure out a story or something or a scenario to build around it. So the fact that it looks like a kind of a bland, watered-down version of your typical co-op multiplayer space marine game doesn't surprise me if the whole project didn't start with a great gameplay idea, but rather with a story idea.
I mean, if I had to guess, I would have thought that Next Level started making this game, and then someone at Nintendo was like, hey, this is sort of Metroid-y. Let's, you know, add Metroid to this to make it more marketable.
Yeah. And to Nintendo's credit, maybe they thought, you know what, we haven't been able to get, for whatever reason, a full Metroid game out there. We know people really want a Metroid game. Let's just call this Metroid, and it'll put some smiles on people's faces. And then they got what happened. So I feel a little bad for them.
Yeah. Well, we got a few months to wait and see how it all plays out.
Yeah. And I look forward to the episode when we finally play this game and it redefines what we enjoy about Metroid titles. But that won't happen.
That's pretty much all the news that we've got right now. But there is one last thing I wanted to mention. There was this little tiny bit of news that came out during E3 and, it almost got missed and swallowed up. And that is some sad, tragic news about my good friend Mega Man.
Hasn't he had enough bad things happen to him off?
He really, really has. But Archie Comics, the publisher of the Mega Man comic book, quietly announced that the Mega Man comic is going to be going away after a few more issues. So I urge any Mega Man fans to get on their email or social media and tell Archie Comics how much you hate their guts and want them to burn.
I gotta feel like
don't do that. But tell them that you want them to bring back Mega Man.
This could be, and I haven't kept up with the comics industry in the last few years, but if anything, to me, this says just how soft comics have gotten in general. Because this is the company that's made what, like 5,000 issues of Sonic at this point.
Up to about 275 regular issues.
And it seemed from afar that the Mega Man comic had a decent enough following and people seemed to like it. So, it's a real shame, especially in a year when Mega Man was all over the place and Smash and Mario Kart as a costume popping up in, I think there's a Mega Man skin in Yoshi's Woolly World. Anyway, it seemed like he'd gotten a little bit more love this year from games.
So, yeah, and the comic book had actually been really, really, really good too. So... Mm. Totally sad to see it go.
Rest in peace, Mega Man.
Curse you, Archie. Well, I think that takes care of the news. So I think it's intermission time, and then we'll be back with our big talk about the Wii U. All right. So as we mentioned earlier, our big topic of discussion this week is the Wii U. And coming out of E3, we've seen that there are some, you know, cool things coming later this year. We've got Xenoblade, we've got Mario, we've got Yoshi, we've got Star Fox. But what's going to be happening after that, after these next few months with a few big games? Is that it for the Wii U? So what do you think? What's going on with that system?
My feeling is that this E3 really did signal that we're starting to wind things down on the Wii U. And You know, it wouldn't be unusual in any year for Nintendo to kind of focus on what's coming up sooner rather than later. But if you just think about it, if they're going to announce the NX, their next console, next year, probably at E3, they haven't said, but they've said it's going to be announced next year for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And especially if it were to launch at holiday next year, or even if it launched the year after that, then they've got to start working on games now. And to that end, Forbes reported that during E3, Nintendo started letting third parties in on what the NX is a little bit for the first time. And by the way, they said that their insiders, whoever they were, claimed that the reaction from third-party developers was very positive.
Well, that's good, at least.
That's good.
You know, I don't have the NX yet. I do have the Wii U, and I'd still like to get more out of the system.
Well, that's the thing, though. If they're talking to third parties now, and probably they've been working on NX titles already internally, then at what point do you just draw a line under the Wii U and say, you know, we've got to look to the future. We've got to start developing as many NX games as we can, because we don't want to run into the same problem we had with the Wii U and the 3DS, where we come out of the gate sluggish and slow because we don't have a great launch library or a steady stream of software following that up. So, you know, Nintendo's already stretched thin. They're doing mobile development. They're doing quality of life stuff that we haven't seen yet. They're doing Wii U. They're doing 3DS. They're going to start working on the NX. They got to start putting the bulk of their efforts into something at some point, and it's going to be the NX sooner rather than later. So
we aren't even up to 3 years yet. Do you think it's time to move on?
Well, I think traditionally Nintendo has a 5-year life cycle with its consoles,
yes.
Or rather 5 years before the next console comes out. You know, they don't always just discontinue the previous console immediately.
Mm-hmm.
I think you can still buy a Wii, actually. But I could make it. I could see the argument for doing this one in 4. I mean, as much as I love the Wii U and as much as I think there's been some amazing games for it, there's no avoiding the fact that it's been largely a commercial failure. And, I think Nintendo needs to take care of the customers it has. But I think if you ask most of them, they just want Nintendo to get back on track again. And if they need to switch consoles to do that, then maybe that's the right way.
So how did we end up in this weird spot for Wii U? I think I heard some comments from Miyamoto coming out of E3, you know, echoing some sentiments that I've heard in the past, saying, oh, you know, people just didn't understand what Wii U was and things of that nature. And I think that's part of it, but I don't think that's the whole thing. I mean, we know there was some confusion. I think that they made a horrible mistake by even using the Wii name.
Yep.
Because by the time that the Wii U came out, the whole Wii fad was pretty much dead. I mean, you know, they had done a great job marketing Wii to the expanded audience, but, you know, that dried up relatively quickly. And then for like the last 2 years of the Wii's life cycle, you know, they weren't hitting the expanded audience and they weren't hitting the core, and just this horrible, sad, slow trickle of games. You know, we barely got Xenoblade. You know, thank God for Xseed for giving us the last story. It was just, a wasteland out there. And the Wii U, or rather the Wii name, meant pretty much nothing. And so to bring out the system with basically the same form factor and the Wii name was not a good way to start.
And we've seen even in sales circulars from major chains, them mislabeling the Wii U as a Wii accessory.
Mm-hmm. That's right. People thought that the gamepad was the Wii U and it was an add-on for your Wii.
Right, that's right. Because if you just glance at it, the Wii U system itself looks almost identical to the Wii. They come mm-hmm. in the same colors. So people just thought the gamepad was an add-on for the Wii.
And you remember when they first showed it to us at that first coming out party at E3, they were still showing a lot of Miis and stuff, and it just looked like the Wii in many ways.
Yeah, and it was just, and also the brand, by the time we got to Wii U, I think the Wii branding, even if people had easily understood that it was a different system, the Wii branding was a negative.
Like I said, yeah, it was. They had spoiled that.
Yeah, because, you know, when Wii first came out and they, and as Nintendo likes to say, they try to expand the gaming population, and they absolutely did. I mean, they went way beyond traditional gamers with the success of the Wii. They had, you know, grandparents buying them to play Wii Sports.
That was the problem, is they appealed to old people, and then they dropped dead. I apologize.
To any dead old people.
I apologize 80% for that. Not 100%, just 80%.
And so you really got in the casual audience, which largely made up people that bought the Wii. I mean, it wasn't people who wanted to play, you know, hardcore games. They were, mm-hmm. you know, unless you were a big Nintendo fan, a lot of those people went and played them elsewhere. But then what happened is during the lifespan of the Wii, smartphones became a thing.
That's right.
And now people who enjoyed or maybe even had been introduced to gaming through the Wii.
They need a new system. They're like, oh, I don't need to go on and pick up a new Nintendo system because I've already got this phone right here that plays all these games that, you know, they're not that great, but they'll certainly work for me.
Yeah, and they were never the type that wanted to stick around and play more Mario Kart and Zelda anyway. They wanted, you know, there was these with a Wii Fit, the Wii Music, the Wii Play people.
Nobody wanted to play Wii Music, be honest.
Yeah, that's true. But they were happy to get these it was light, kind of non-committal gaming just whenever they had the time for it. And that's exactly what smartphone gaming is now. So during the lifespan of the Wii, Nintendo essentially said, you know what, core gamers, we're not going to focus on you really at E3. And that's mm-hmm. not to say they didn't put out some amazing games that traditional gamers will like. But the marketing message was always painfully targeted at the white family on the couch who were like, you know, laughing and enjoying something casual together.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Those early marketing materials are pretty bad.
Yeah, and then they essentially said through their branding, you know, traditional core gamers, this really isn't for you.
Mm-hmm.
So then when the crowd that they had been catering to left, I think it left a bad taste in people's mouths. And people were happy, a lot of people were happy gaming on PlayStation or Xbox and didn't see a reason to come back. Now, obviously, people like you and myself who just love Nintendo games still believe that they make the best games in the world. Long-time love for franchises like Mario and Zelda. We never went anywhere, and I think that's ultimately who Nintendo's left with. But it isn't a massive enough audience that that's all they can be satisfied with. They need to continue mm-hmm. appealing to new people.
The other problem that they had is that, you know, there was confusion about the brand. There was the damage they did to the Wii brand. And so when someone like Miyamoto says, oh, I think that, you know, people just didn't really understand what this is, I think it does ring true in those respects. But then in the other respect, you know, there is the whole thing about the gamepad. I think that the core gaming audience, you know, I think they did understand what the gamepad was, but they just didn't find a big screen on your controller to be that compelling. And so, you know, they were kind of, you know, hurting on both ends.
And again, that's Nintendo's fault. And Nintendo's been in kind of emergency mode the last two E3s, and their message has been, we're trying to finally make games that will sell people on the idea of a gamepad, games that show what you can do with two screens that's better than just one.
I'm not sure they've done a fantastic job of that.
No, I mean, they did a terrible job of it early on. I think now they've built up enough software and they've showed us some stuff coming out where you can see the value in it. And I maintain that the gamepad overall is a good thing.
So do I.
I think at worst it just doesn't move the needle for you at all, but it doesn't make anything worse because essentially it's got all the...
it's kind of the ultimate controller. It's got your analog sticks and your shoulder buttons and your D-pads, and then they're like, oh, hey, and there's a giant screen in the middle. Oh, and hey, it has NFC functionality. So I really don't get people who are like, oh, this controller, terrible. How can anyone play games with this?
Yeah, it's not like on the Wii they were shoehorning motion controls into everything. And on rare occasions, it was better because of it. But more often than not, you just wished you could put motion controls down and play.
I mean,
it
for a traditional game, the Wii, you'd have to dumb your game down to use that controller. But that's completely the opposite with Wii U.
Yeah, the gamepad doesn't make anything worse. It only makes it better, although most of the time marginally better.
Yeah. I mean, it is kind of odd that you can only use one with the system. I guess that's kind of weird about it.
But now, some people would argue that that if Nintendo hadn't included the gamepad, which is a pricey component, they could have put the extra money saved into having better graphics and such. But you know what? And maybe that would be better for some people. I certainly don't dislike better graphics by any means. But I would argue that that even if Wii U had shown up without a gamepad, And let's say it's packaged with a Pro controller. And if it had graphics about as good as PlayStation 4 or Xbox One, I don't think it would have moved the needle very much. I don't think that necessarily would have meant that third parties would have had a lot of success with a larger volume of software on a Nintendo platform when its brand just didn't really appeal to a lot of people who weren't, you know, traditional Nintendo fans.
Well, I guess we'll never know for sure.
Yep. But, yeah, so we definitely see the mistakes that they've made, and the good thing is Nintendo sees them.
Yeah, I mean, they learned from those mistakes. You know, they totally changed what they were doing as far as trying to appeal to this expanded audience. You know, it took them a little bit of time, but then they started, you know, totally changing things around. We're not getting, you know, Wii Music 2 and, you know, Wii U Play 3 or whatever. They have, you know, totally turned around and are focusing on their core fans. We're getting more Mario. We're getting more Zelda. We're not getting Metroid. But, you know, we have, you know, the most amazing Mario Kart ever. We have a really, really fantastic Smash Brothers game. There was no backpedaling on Xenoblade X like they were with the original, where they kind of like, oh, yeah, that's not really happening. No, they've been behind that the whole time. We're getting a massive full-fledged RPG in December. And, you know, they realize that that is their audience now. You know, that's why we got, finally got Earthbound on the virtual console. We got Earthbound Beginnings out of nowhere. I mean, who's that appeal to except for the hardest of the hardcore? Mario Maker, I would probably say the same thing. That's a, you know, pretty hardcore product. I mean, I could see casual players get into it too, but it's hardcore fans that want to make their own video games.
Yeah. I mean, if you want to be crass about it, then you could look at this and say this is Nintendo kind of crawling back to the people that they'd somewhat turned away from, appreciating them more and trying to milk them for all they're worth. But
well, they kind of have to.
Yeah, it's all they've got left. But the end result is the hardcore fans are getting more of what they want. And obviously, we're not getting the volume of titles we'd like from Nintendo First Party. And in some cases, we're not getting key titles like a real Metroid, like you mentioned. But, I mean, just the fact that these releases of big traditional Nintendo games like Mario Kart 8 or Smash Brothers or even stuff like Yoshi's Woolly World are
Hyrule Warriors.
I mean, we're getting, and a lot of these games in Splatoon, you know, that's a new franchise, but all these games are becoming platforms for, you know, a lot of extra content. And they found ways to turn these games, to make them viable longer, to keep you playing them longer and more excited and involved in them longer. And so in that case, I think it's been a mostly great use of DLC to help extend the life of these titles and make it seem like there's actually a lot more going on in the world of Nintendo than there maybe sometimes is. Because you haven't put these games away yet. They're still vital. You're still enjoying them.
Yeah, play them for months and months.
Yeah.
So that's one thing that the system has done really well. No question about it.
Yeah, I mean, I played a lot of Wii U this weekend, and it was mostly actually Mario Kart. And that's a game that maybe traditionally I would be, you know, done with already. I've probably put over 200, maybe more crazy hours into a racing game.
It's insane.
Yeah. So, and I think they've learned a lot. I mean, we said that earlier, but I think DLC and also the things they're saying about how they finally realize they need a unified account system.
Yep, that's true. I mean, that's all talk until it happens.
Yeah, but they have announced that they're actively working on it. Some things they say, yeah, we understand this, but it doesn't seem like they're doing anything about it. This, they're actually doing something about, and we'll see how they finally implement it. But I think their eShop stuff and digital purchasing has gotten better.
Oh, God. Yeah, it is amazing to see how much the purchasing experience has changed with 3DS and Wii U compared to the DSi and the Wii. Man, those old shops were horrible to navigate.
So it could be that
we
look back on this platform as kind of an important one, or an important step, rather, in the evolution of Nintendo's approach to dedicated gaming systems. And actually, historically, if you look at their home consoles, the first one's usually revolutionary, and then the next one is an iteration of what came before. You had the SNES was just a prettier NES, then you had the N64, which was a brand new thing that introduced polygonal gaming with that generation. But then the follow-up to that was GameCube, which was pretty much just a more polished version of that experience. Then the Wii was the huge disruptor, and then the Wii U was kind of just continuing that on.
Sort of. I mean, it really doesn't feel like, you know, it's continuing on the Wii. It's so different in so many ways.
I mean, it's HD, but there's still a ton of motion control. All your Wii games and all your Wii accessories work with it.
That's true.
I think the biggest differentiating factor is the gamepad, but they haven't yet made the gamepad that big of a difference because it hasn't really changed the gameplay. I would say the lasting effects on gaming, Nintendo gaming today, it still felt much more with motion controls and pointer controls than with gamepad functionality. So anyway, that's in generally speaking, I feel like we're maybe due for a true revolution with the NX.
Yeah, if we're gonna get it, hopefully they have, you know, something up their sleeve that's you know, really new and innovative.
Well, this is kind of a canned answer from them, but when asked you know, why they're not talking about it yet, I think it was Iwata, maybe Miyamoto, gave the usual response that, well, we don't want to show it too early and have the competitors steal our ideas.
Well, that's understandable. I mean, that totally happened with the Wii. As soon as, you know, that took off, everyone was just, hey, motion control, up the wazoo.
And with everything Nintendo's done, I mean, you look at controllers now, and, you know, Nintendo, they may not have created everything that exists in gaming today wholly from scratch, but if Nintendo had never existed, there's a good chance, you know, gaming wouldn't even resemble what it does today. So everything Nintendo does is kind of taken. So that's understandable. But, you know, you hope that, maybe not read too much into those comments, but you hope that if they do have ideas they're worried about being stolen, then they're ideas that would be harder to guess than just, you know, we're doing the same thing but tweaking it in some small way.
So I have a question for you about Wii U. You know, given, you know, how it started off very, very slow and how they weren't really doing that much stuff with the gamepad, do you think that it would have been to their benefit if they had just said, you know what, we understand, I mean, they wouldn't say this externally, but they would say themselves, we know that this isn't really working out. We can probably do better if we position ourselves as, like, the budget system and, you know, maybe drop the gamepad, just, you know, package it with some more traditional controller, sell it for, you know, $75 less. It's like, hey, we've got a bunch of great games out here. So if you're on a budget, pick up this you know, game system that runs all your favorite Nintendo titles, and it won't break the bank.
That's a really tough question to answer, and I think it's tougher than most people realize. I think in hindsight, people see that the gamepad didn't really move the needle, and maybe some people would prefer it to have remained an expensive system with better graphics. But other people might say, look, if Wii was successful in part because it was significantly less expensive to the competition, so maybe that would have helped Wii U. I don't know, though. I feel like they were stuck they put themselves in an impossible situation. I think the only thing they had potentially differentiating them and adding value over what you could get on other consoles was the gamepad. Now, they didn't deliver with the gamepad, so they found themselves in a position where it was kind of weighing them down as well.
But they could have differentiated themselves with price.
They could have. But ultimately, I think in either scenario, your customer base is largely the same. It's just people who really value Nintendo franchises and want to be able to play those games and play with those characters. And we're still obviously going to get to the point where they'll be able to discount it at some point significantly and offer it as kind of a, look, here's a ready-made library for a system that's now really cheap and young kids can play it and afford it. So I don't think they've entirely left that off the table.
Well, I think that they should have done it a while back. That would have really been to their benefit. And just sort of said, hey, you know, here's the gamepad. If you want it, you know, you can buy it separately if you buy, you know, our basic system that doesn't include it. But I think it was a missed opportunity for them to try to, you know, undercut the competition and make inroads in that way.
That could very well be true. But I think if you're going to have the gamepad, it has to be packed in. Otherwise, it doesn't get significant enough support.
Well, I mean, who's going to support it? They don't have to worry about the third parties. It's only first-party games you've got anyway, so they would support it. I don't think that would be a factor.
Maybe that's true. I mean, Nintendo's generally been better than Sony about supporting peripherals that it puts out, but they've still got a pretty spotty track record with it. I don't know. I just think ultimately it all comes down to the fact that they didn't have great software ideas on how to really showcase the gamepad.
But you can still have, you know, fantastic games without, you know, all of this, you know, built-in gamepad functionality. I mean, I don't think there are that many games on the system that really take great advantage of it. I think most of them you can do just as well with a regular controller that doesn't have a screen on it. I think that'd probably be okay for the most part.
Yeah, I think I'm looking at it from the perspective of I believe that Nintendo has put themselves, in a position where they do have to be the quirky kind of, in a way, second fiddle or second console to a more traditional PlayStation 4 Xbox experience. I can't see in any days ahead Nintendo ever being able to say, we're just going to do what Sony and Xbox is doing, but we're going to carve out a third of the market for ourselves. I don't think they're capable of doing that. So I think they have to have something that really differentiates their system. It just so happens that this time the idea they bet on fell flat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it makes me wonder what they're going to try to do next.
Yeah. I mean, and I'm sitting here talking about how, Nintendo fell flat, Nintendo can't compete with these guys, this or that. I still love all their games, and I maintain that the
library... Well, yeah, as far as the software goes, they can hang with anybody.
And I maintain that the library that's on Wii U right now is still better than the library they've produced so far with Xbox and PlayStation 4, even though they've put out some great games. And hey, I'm the rare guy who really enjoyed Nintendo Land and thought,
yes, you do,
and thought that the gamepad actually worked really great in that game. But we're just kind of talking about this from the broad kind of business angle, and obviously there's no avoiding the fact that the Wii U, when all is said and done, will be largely thought of as a commercial failure.
So you think it has any life left in it, or you think it's going to be this slate of games we have coming out? And then it's like, okay, we're still going to get Zelda, and that's just kind of going to be it.
Well, Iwata reassured investors at the investor briefing last week that they will continue making 3DS and Wii games while preparing for the NX.
That doesn't mean a lot to me. I mean, they could say this, that they did the same thing for Wii when they were working on Wii U. And like I mentioned earlier, it was just a sad, pathetic trickle in those last 2 years.
It wouldn't surprise me at this point if the Wii U... beyond what's already been announced, and this includes Zelda Wii U, which probably won't be out till Christmas 2016, just a guess, but it seems like we're headed toward that direction. It seems like we're done with AAA titles on Wii U. You're not going to start a 2-year-plus development cycle.
Yeah, we know we're not getting that Metroid.
Right. They've said that that it's too late to develop the Metroid. Tanabe has said that he does have ideas for a traditional Metroid Prime game. That would actually spin off of the ending for Metroid Prime 3 Corruption. But it was clear in his comments that they hadn't begun that yet. So there's no way that's happening on Wii U. I think we're going to get little things here and there, smaller projects. Maybe if we're lucky, like a couple of B titles announced. And a lot of continuing DLC support for the big games that have, staying power. But as much as I don't want to see Wii U dry up so soon, I also don't want to see them recreate the same mistakes with NX. So
yeah, that's kind of what I'm thinking. What do they do to prevent the same sort of thing from happening again?
Well, they still haven't announced what Retro is working on. I'm hoping they're working on a Metroid Prime game or something similarly huge for the NX launch. I'm hoping they're working on a lot of games already, or at least planning them at this point for the NX launch, because that's the biggest problem. Even beyond whatever kind of, quirky features the next system might be based around, if you just don't have quality software coming out consistently, nothing else matters. And that was the biggest problem the 3DS came out, and they were able to turn that boat around like 6 months after launch.
Mm-hmm.
But it came out overpriced and with no quality software. And they had to basically do a $75, something like that, discount and reintroduce it with Ocarina of Time 3D and some other key software. They did the same thing with the DS, although the turnaround wasn't quite as dire.
Well, it definitely took a while for it to get rolling, if that's what you're saying.
I mean, they launched the DS without any games that really showed you why you needed two screens. And then eventually they came out with Nintendogs and Mario Kart 7 and
Brain Age,
and those titles that really were different kinds of games. I mean, Mario Kart 7 was more traditional, but it was a big title, so that helped. And they've had to do that with every system at some point. They've had a harder time doing it with Wii U, although, like, all those games you rattled off earlier are great. And I think when all is said and done with the Wii U, it'll probably be remembered along the same lines as the Dreamcast, this amazing system that had some beloved games but ultimately fizzled out.
I never play my Dreamcast.
Actually, I'll remember the Wii U more fondly than the Dreamcast. But I think there is a pretty sizable contingent of fans out there that really, really appreciated that system.
Well, it sounds to me like what you're saying, though, is that in order to avoid these same problems with their next system, with the NX, they're going to have to throw Wii U under the bus a little bit.
They are. They just don't have the resources, and no company would, really, to simultaneously produce robust AAA software for three different platforms simultaneously, while they're also trying to get into mobile gaming and quality of life stuff and everything else, and they're making toys now. So they have to kind of you know, place their bets on something, and it should be on the future. It should be on the NX.
Well, I definitely can't argue with that. You know, we'll still have to see where it goes, but we know we still have some great games coming, and we know that we've still got Zelda down the line. Hopefully that's not the only thing. You know, it's possible that its death has been reported prematurely. We might just be a little bit over-dramatic. And speaking of dramatic, I believe it is now time for this week's dramatic reading, featuring the back of the box from the NES game Bad Dudes. Kidnapped. The headlines scream. The nation is paralyzed in shock. Is it possible? The president kidnapped? Without a moment's hesitation, you know who is responsible. The Dragon Ninja. As Blader Stryker, aka the Bad Dudes, you take to the streets to rescue the president. But the Dragon Ninja is ready for you. He sends wave after wave of relentless ninjas, vicious dogs, and enemies to stop you. Armed with knives, shurikens, and nunchucks, you must fight tooth and nail, in alleys, on waterways, even on moving semi-trucks. In the end, if you're bad enough, you take on the Dragon Ninja himself. You must defeat him and snatch the president from the helicopter that's about to whisk him away to who knows where. It'll take every skill you've ever mastered, and a few new ones, to be bad.
Well, that's it for this week. As always, you can find us at powerpros.podbean.com, or you can follow us at powerprospod on both Facebook and Twitter. You can also follow The Hoff on Twitter at Chris The Hoff, and I'm at Chris Slate. Hoff also has a cool blog called Still Playing With Power, which you can find at christhehoff.tumblr.com. You can email us at powerprospod@gmail.com. And as always, thanks so much to everybody who is nice enough to give us a rating on iTunes. And please keep it up. We really appreciate it.
Thanks for listening, everybody. For myself, Chris Slate.
See ya.
And our friend Gabby J.
Yay.
We'll see you next time.